He grabbed me really forcefully by my upper arms, and he said, "I'm so f***ing sick of this shit. Get back over there." And he starts pushing me back towards the cliff.
You just heard from Ariel Koenig testifying against her husband, Gerhard Koenig, recently in a Honolulu court. She said Gerhard, a former anesthesiologist, attacked her with a rock and syringe on a cliff during a hike on Oahu's Palipuka Trail.
I'm screaming and he's telling me, "Shut the fuck up. Nobody's going to hear you out here. Nobody's coming to save you." And I'm saying, like, "You can't do this. Everyone knows we're on a hike. They'll know this wasn't an accident and our kids will be orphans. You'll go to jail and I'll be dead. Like, you have to stop." And again, he's saying, like, "You're done. We're done with you. We don't need you anymore. You're done.
And it's not the only disturbing case involving a husband and wife on vacation that has garnered national attention over the past weeks. In the Bahamas, Brian Hooker was arrested and then later released after his wife, Lynette, disappeared during a nighttime boat ride. He said she fell overboard off of their dinghy. I'm 48 Hours correspondent Natalie Morales, and this is Case by Case. Each week, the team from 48 Hours will bring you the biggest stories in true crime in real time. And joining me now for our very first episode is CBS News chief correspondent Matt Gutman, who covered the Koenig trial. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Natalie.
And of course, our team at 48 Hours. You know, the reason we decided to start this podcast is because we really wanted an opportunity to dive deeper into the cases that are currently in the headlines each week. It pairs really nicely with what we do in our long form reporting at 48 Hours.
Absolutely. I think it's a perfect compliment. And I'm excited to be with you on this one.
So we have these two big cases involving, again, husbands and wives on vacation. Now, The Onion, for those who don't know it, it's a satirical publication. They tried to make a joke out of this with the headline, "State Department Issues Travel Warning for Women Vacationing with Husbands." It goes on to say the State Department would soon be publishing a list of locations that women should avoid when accompanied by their partner for life, such as remote hiking trails, cliffs, and the railings of watercraft. Clearly, Matt, they're having their fun with this, but given the true crime headlines that we've been reading and seeing lately, this got our attention.
It definitely did. You know, we don't want to be flip about these things, but it is a little strange how bad things keep happening to people when they go on vacations.
I mean, this is not the first time that there have been cases like these. 48 Hours has covered half a dozen cases of cliff pushing alone over the years. So bringing us back to the Koenig case, you know, I was actually on spring break in Hawaii with my family when the trial was underway and trying to take a break from work, but yet there it was right in front of me. So I was glued to the coverage there. It was a big story in Hawaii, but it also, of course, made for national headlines everywhere.
All over the place. And so, you know, I mean, Hawaii is dotted with these incredible trails like the Palipuka Trail. Gorgeous. Often not so heavily traveled, but often with really narrow ridges and really steep drops. And this happened on March 24th, 2025, almost exactly a year ago. And this was Gerhard Koenig's second marriage. He had met Ariel on eHarmony and they got married in 2018. He had two children from a previous marriage and they eventually had two children together. But obviously there were some cracks in the relationship. At some point in late 2024, Natalie, Gerhard found out that Ariel was having what has been called an emotional affair. She hasn't denied it, but it became pretty clear in this trial that this was not physical. This was an emotional connection between two colleagues who seemed to get along and texted each other a lot. So it very much upset Gerhard. He talked to her about it. He raised the issue. He found out. And he was very upset. They had been in therapy. They'd been trying to work on it. And the idea for this trip is that this was going to be this healing event for the couple. They actually lived on Maui. The Palipuka Trail is in Oahu. This was to celebrate her 36th birthday. Now, the prosecution says that this was all premeditated. He took her there in order to kill her somehow, throw her off the cliff, inject her with something. And the defense denied that, saying that this was not premeditated, They said that he had tried to act in self-defense. But the crux of it is prosecution said he tried to push her off the cliff. That didn't work. He then tried to inject her. He is an anesthesiologist, after all, with some sort of medical grade anesthesia. When that didn't work and she was able to fend him off, they were scuffling on the ground. And then the prosecution said that he grabbed a rock. And in court, they showed this rock. It was, you know, this is a big, it's bigger than a softball, jagged edges. And they say he bashed her in the head. So what started as a lovely hike on a beautiful day obviously ended very violently. And nobody disputes that.
Fortunately for Ariel, there happened to be two women who were also coming up that very trailhead. And it was these two women who called 911 to report the attack. Take a listen to the call.
Hi, someone's currently being attacked on the top of Polly Kuka.
Where?
There's a man trying to kill her. She's blood all over her face.
Just a horrific scene that they came upon, Matt, you know, to see Ariel on the ground like that, bloodied face. And they fortunately were in the right place at the right time.
And it was very interesting to see both of these eyewitnesses taking the stand in question by the prosecution. One of them was Sarah Buxbaum. She's the person who made the initial call, and she describes Ariel like crawling on her stomach towards her, gushing with blood. Let's listen.
When I saw her, she was on her stomach crawling towards us.
Now, how close was the man to the edge?
Fairly close.
And what was over the edge of the trail?
Nothing.
Now, Buxbaum says she saw the man holding the rock, and when she was asked to identify him in court, she pointed right at Gerhardt.
Yeah, and you know, it was even more, I think, horrifying than that 911 call was seeing that body cam footage that was played when the police arrived there on the scene. It was really gruesome.
You know, Natalie, heads bleed a lot, and when you're bashed with volcanic rock, you know, in the side of the head, I think she was cut right up here, just on the hairline and some other places. It's scary. And she was gushing blood. Her head was completely covered. And luckily, these two first eyewitnesses were nurses. And so they're quickly trying to bandage her up. But they're also trying to figure out exactly what happened here.
I mean, she is so strong to survive that attack and to fight back the way she did. You know, I've hosted a couple of podcast episodes where we've interviewed people who've lived to tell their stories, like Ariel. And just to see her composure on the witness stand, I mean, she was just remarkable. She didn't get very emotional at all describing the attack. You saw her pause a little bit and look down and try to put herself back in that place, but she really kept her composure.
You know, she's a nuclear engineer, and she spoke about the incident almost clinically, not robotically. Like, she was very human, but she was very measured. She was composed. And even when the defense, time after time and for hours at a time, really tried to drill into this emotional affair she had with a colleague, she didn't get upset. She didn't snap back at them. She just answered them matter-of-factly throughout. It was very impressive.
Well, the court heard from Gerhardt's son, Emil. This was his son from his first marriage. And after the altercation, Gerhardt FaceTimed with Emil. Take a listen.
What did the defendant tell you during that call, as close to word for word as you can remember?
That he would not be making it back to Maui and to take good care of the younger kids, and that he had, that Ari, my stepmom, had been cheating on him and that he tried to kill her.
And then Emil said this.
During that call, the next plan that he said was to jump off the cliff.
And how did you react to hearing that?
I told him not to.
That's a lot to take in. And by the way, he was 18 at the time of this. I mean, just, you can only imagine what an 18-year-old is processing when he gets that kind of phone call from his father.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine how distraught he was, but he also seemed to have a lot of presence of mind, Natalie, so much so that he then went on to tell Ariel's parents about the call. It's also interesting that Emil referred to his father when he was testifying as the defendant. So I don't know. We don't really know what their relationship was like before this. Clearly, after it, it was not very good. On the other hand, Gerhardt later said that he credits Emil with saving his life because he urged him, as you just heard, not to jump, not to do it.
And I think what was most shocking of all, at least it was to me, was when Gerhardt himself took the stand in his defense. Were you surprised as you were watching and covering the case?
I mean, how many murder trials have we covered, Natalie, where the defendant, even though they have an interest perhaps in taking the stand and have always said that they want their story to be told, don't take the stand because it can go so horrifically wrong.
It's too big of a risk. Yeah.
And typically, when the defendant, especially in a murder or attempted murder trial, takes the stand, it is pretty much a Hail Mary. So essentially what Gerhardt said is that he did hit her. He didn't try to kill her. And he said that he never actually confessed to trying to kill Ariel on that call with his son. And he said it was Ariel who had initiated that confrontation on the trail, that she shoved him. And he wasn't exactly sure why she was screaming at him, but essentially he kept saying that he was acting in self-defense. And he used the rock against her because she started it.
She, like, was holding on to me by my testicles, basically, like, that hard.
Okay. Did she grab it and let go, or did she grab it and hold on?
She grabbed it and held on.
Now, what happens after she does that?
Then I try to free my testicles, and so I'm like thrashing with and I get both hands free, and I'm trying to get her to let go of my testicles, and then she hits me with a rock on the side of the face.
They also showed one of his booking photos, and he did have a couple of gashes on his face.
But then you see Ariel on that body cam footage, and you see the extent of her injuries. I mean, how do they explain that?
So he never actually disputes that he hit her with the same rock. Let's take a listen.
Why did you hit her? Why did you react that way?
Just on instinct to defend myself.
Okay. How fast was this all happening? Pretty fast?
Really fast.
Okay. Gerhardt, who initially was pretty composed and stone-faced during the trial, now started to break down. He gets very emotional on the stand, especially at the suggestion that he tried to kill himself. Gerhardt said he was horrified that he had hurt his wife, obviously admitted to doing that, and that he felt hopeless. And again, he denied ever trying to kill her, but he did admit to hurting her.
The jury came back a day after the closing arguments with their verdict.
Yeah, and it was not for the stiffest charge, which was attempted second-degree murder. But he was convicted of a lesser charge of attempted manslaughter based on extreme or emotional disturbance. So the jury felt like something had happened. The degree to which he had planned it was unclear, but it seems clear, according to the jury, that he tried to hurt her and had some intent to do so.
Well, this was not the only married couple on vacation getting loads of attention this past week. When we come back, a mystery out of the Bahamas. Welcome back. All right, Matt Gutman joining us. You know, as I told you, Matt, 48 hours, we have covered so many cases of someone falling or being pushed off a cliff, as you recall.
Kind of shocking how many there are, Natalie.
Yeah, well, I could read you a list of them. I mean, there was a case back in 2015. We called it the accidental husband, where Harold Henthorne, he claimed his first wife died in a car accident. His second wife then, Tony, he claimed slipped off a cliff while hiking with him in Rocky Mountain National Park. Jurors convicted him of pushing her in the end in that case. There was also another case that Peter Van Zandt looked into, the death of Rhonda Casto. She fell about 150 feet to her death at Eagle Creek during a hike with her boyfriend, Stephen Nichols. Nichols claimed it was all an accident, but he later pleaded guilty to criminally negligent homicide. In 2013, there was another case where Leslie Mueller, she was a successful doctor, she slipped and fell while she was posing for a photo. The question was it her husband who pushed her? He was actually tried twice in Colorado, but the jury there both times failed to reach a verdict. So prosecutors dismissed that case in 2013 and they canceled a third trial. But this gives you just an idea. I mean, it goes on and on in our archives. There are a lot of cases that we've covered like this.
It's interesting because you think it's so strange. Wow, that many people who were pushed off cliffs and, you know, how can that be? But I suppose in the era of surveillance and CCTV cameras and people's video cameras, perhaps if you intend to commit a crime like this, cliff sides, the water, boats where there aren't many witnesses and aren't video cameras to capture you doing something possibly very sinister, it seems like the perfect venue for a crime of this sort.
Right. Correct. And you know, I don't know if you saw the New York Times piece that was in the paper the other day that it was titled, "If He Leaves You on a Mountain, End Your Relationship." The so-called Alpine divorce, you know, certainly not the same thing pushing somebody off the cliff that these women are talking about, being abandoned, though, in tough terrain, their partners leaving them behind, going off on their own. The Onion also mentioned remote hiking trails, but water and watercraft also is something to be thinking about.
Yeah. Years ago, I covered the disappearance pretty extensively of Robin Gardner, and she was visiting Aruba with her, call him boyfriend at the time, Gary Giordano, who had, just before they left, taken a $1 million insurance policy out on her life. They went swimming one day, and he claimed, well, the current came in, there were these waves, I saw her swept away, and she was never seen again. And literally, they have not found a trace of her. And Giordano always insisted he had nothing to do with it. He was arrested. He was detained. They had questioned him for weeks and weeks and weeks. Eventually, they released him, and he has never been charged with a crime either. So obviously, there is a certain trend here that we're seeing.
Yeah. If you think back to the case that we've been talking about in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I thought that that's where this was leading. Yeah, that's an interesting case.
Like a Michigan couple, they're the Hookers. They're experienced sailors. They're out at sea on their dinghy when the husband says that his wife, Lynette, went apparently overboard and she happened to have the lanyard with the key of the dinghy in the boat on her neck. And she goes missing.
You know, they've been traveling on and off for years and they documented their sailing together on Instagram and other social media. So they were kind of known. They weren't like big influencers, but you know, there were reports that this marriage wasn't great, despite what Instagram seemed to show. They had split up temporarily in 2024. And at one point, Lynette apparently texted a friend that, you know, it was real bad. I can't be out there with him. But they did end up reconciling.
And Lynette's daughter apparently said that this is not the picture perfect couple. And there was fighting, there was drinking. In fact, there had even been allegations in the past of domestic violence. So, you know, this was a couple that had their battles.
And we want to be clear, Natalie, that unlike Gerhard Koenig, nobody has been charged in the case of Lynette Hooker. Brian was detained, but he has been released and he has not been formally charged with anything. He did speak to CBS News just after his release, and he said that he still has hope that somewhere out there that maybe Lynette is still alive.
You want to keep looking for Lynette?
I'm going to need somebody with more authority to tell me to stop.
When our correspondent asked him, so what happened on the boat? Hooker's lawyer ended the interview.
Yeah, well, Brian Hooker is free, but local police say he does remain a suspect. He can still be charged if the evidence warrants, and we'll, of course, continue to watch the developments in that case.
And Natalie, there's another story that we should mention, and that one involves influencer Ashley Robinson. She's known as Ashley Janae on social media, and this happened in Zanzibar off the east coast of Africa. There, she mysteriously died on a trip with her boyfriend while celebrating her 31st birthday. And we were told that on this trip, her boyfriend even proposed to her.
I've been just following this story as well. I know that he's being questioned right now by authorities as of this recording. They're holding his passport until autopsy reports are complete, but it's still very much a mysterious case and not a lot of details.
No, and her family, and CBS has been talking to them, are obviously deeply disturbed, deeply concerned. They found out that Ashley was in the hospital from the fiance. Okay, that seems normal. But then communication ceased, and they only learned that she died from the hotel. Authorities had told the media that Ashley's fiance initially was not suspected of any wrongdoing, but we're going to stay on this story. We're going to keep talking to Ashley's family and obviously update as needed if there are any developments in this story.
Yeah, to be continued on that one. Well, a very, very interesting first episode of Case by Case. Thank you, Matt Gutman, for joining us. Appreciate you always and your insights.
And I was so happy to be with you, Natalie. Congratulations.
Thank you, Matt. Now, we will be back next week with another episode of Case by Case. Be sure to rate and review and let us know which cases you are following. To catch up on our investigations into hiking and vacation deaths, join us on our YouTube channel at 48 Hours.